Jordan.
What's up, Susan Niebergall?
What's up?
How you doing?
Good. Good, good, good. It's great to be back.
Welcome to Dallas.
Thank you. We are sitting here sipping some red, some chilled red. It's great.
Chugging some red wine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's great to be back. It's been a couple months this time around.
It has. It's been a couple months. And now we're doing the June and July editions of the Inner Circle.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a good bit done today. We got kind of things planned out.
Yeah.
And so we're going to just kind of hop into questions. I've got a bunch of different questions, and then something else we'll talk about at the end. So
let's do it.
Okay. So first question, what are BCAAs and do I need them?
All right. So BCAAs stand for branched chain amino acids. And you do not need them unless the only reason you would not even need the only reason you would need to take them, or it would be beneficial, I would say, is if you're not getting enough protein, right? So if you get enough protein, you're getting plenty of amino acids so that you're going to be totally fine.
Right.
You stimulate protein synthesis enough, you get enough amino acids in order to build muscle, all that fun stuff. If you're not getting enough protein, then it could make sense to potentially take BCAAs. But the easy fix is just eat more protein. Or so eat sufficient protein.
Why is it such a thing? Like, why are BCAAs such a thing?
Marketing.
Yeah.
Marketing. They're marketed as a way to stimulate muscle protein synthesis with very few... I mean, they're essentially zero calories for all intents and purposes. And the way that they're marketed is that you can stimulate muscle protein synthesis and you can build muscle just with that.
Yeah.
But it's not accurate. It's all marketing. I will say the other group of people who it could potentially be beneficial for are people who are bodybuilders, physique competitors, who are, their job is to be as lean as possible, to have as low of a body fat as possible and have as much muscle as possible, right? And so in order to get as low as in body fat as possible, not from a health perspective, this is actually, they go too far to the other extreme where it's no longer healthy, to get like for a guy 3-5% body fat and to be able to have the most amount of muscle at the same time, sometimes taking BCAAs can help prevent muscle breakdown when you're that lean. Because when you're that lean and natural and not using anabolic steroids, it can become... it's relatively easy for your body to want to break down that extra muscle. It doesn't need it. It doesn't want it. It'll want to get it out. So having BCAAs could help in that situation, but I don't think the vast majority of people listening to your or my podcast is that population.
You know, and I found the part of the question, do I need them? And, you know, you don't need any supplements. And I think that's something to hammer home. You don't need.
Correct.
Right? I think people look to supplements so quickly nowadays and to... really, that's going to be the difference maker.
Yep.
When they haven't been consistent with anything yet, and they don't even, you know, they don't track anything, they have no idea what they're consuming, and they think, well, oh, I just need to take this supplement or that supplement. I think people are just looking at them as something that will be the game changer. And I can't think of any of them that will be the game changer.
It's funny that people always ask, both of us, is this necessary? Do I need it?
Yeah.
It's a supplement. And in the name, supplement.
By definition.
Supplemental.
Yes.
In which, if you want to, sure, but it's not going to make that big of a difference. Even just now, before we came down here, we had protein powder.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't need to have protein powder. We could have had a fucking chicken breast.
Yeah.
Or eggs or whatever, but the protein powder was much more convenient. We took it out, picked a flavor, scoop it in the milk, stir it up, drink it.
Yeah.
As I... went in the fridge. I looked to see if there was any protein I wanted. I didn't want Greek yogurt. I didn't want a huge fat chicken breast that was in there right now. I was like, I just want quick protein. Boom. It's not because the protein is different or better or any of that. It's just an easy, convenient way to do it. And I would say protein is one of the few supplements that have the most amount of merit, and it's still not necessary. You can still just get it from regular whole foods. BCAAs, if you're eating protein, you're getting enough from your food. Otherwise, like essentially, if you're buying BCAAs, which are also very expensive, and you're eating enough protein, and then you're taking BCAAs on top of that, you're essentially paying for expensive urine. because it becomes redundant. It's just not necessary. It's not, you don't need that. It would be more essential if you weren't getting enough protein. But the fix for not getting enough protein isn't BCAAs.
No.
It's eat more fucking protein.
Yeah, increase the size of the piece of chicken that you just ate.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, I mean, start with that. I don't know, for some reason, how to get more protein in someone's diet, that seems to come up all the time. And to me, I'm just like, make the 4 ounces 6 or 8 ounces.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, start with that.
Yep.
And watch what happens just from doing that at one meal, much less try 3 meals.
Exactly.
You know, it's not that hard to increase it. So you're going to want to eat food anyway. It's just going to sit with you longer. And
yeah.
Yeah.
There's no supplement that you could buy at GNC, Vitamin Shop, any supplement store, whatever, that's necessary.
Yeah.
None.
None. None at all. Okay. With over 70 pounds to lose, should I go for a body recomp or shed pounds first? If lose, how many first?
Honestly, this person is getting way too in the weeds.
It's consuming
way too much information and just not enough action.
Yep.
It's like you're seeing all these different ideas and thoughts. Well, maybe you should do this. It's like just... I think that person, what they need to do is they just need to fucking start. And if you have 70 pounds to lose, the first question that I would ask is, are you the kind of person that needs to see quick progress in order to believe that it's working and stay motivated? Or are you more okay with a little bit slower a much slower process?
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, 70 pounds is a substantial amount to lose. And 70 pounds is enough where, who knows, maybe you could be healthier right now, but if you keep that 70 pounds on for a long period of time, you could start to get real negative health effects as a result of it. Never mind the physiological aspects of it, whether it's insulin resistance, but also just the extra stress on your joints, the mental health, emotional health, physical health. There's so much that comes with it. I would say just start with a regular fat loss phase. And what's funny about that is whether in the regular fat loss phase, you're still going to be strength training. And if you're brand new to strength training, you got 70 pounds to lose, you're still going to build muscle. So you're actually going to be doing a recomp anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say eat in a calorie deficit, walk, and lift.
Yeah.
That's really it. I wouldn't worry about trying to do these more advanced. A body recomposition is something that's a little bit more advanced, and you have to have more experience under your belt before you do it. That's not something you do your first time around when you got 70 pounds to lose.
I also feel like the person with 70 pounds to lose and trying to body recomp is going to be so frustrated because they're not going to see the results they want to see because they still have 70 pounds to lose.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yes, definitely go into a calorie deficit depending on whether you want to make it go faster, slower, whatever. But get into a calorie deficit and stick with that for a while.
Yeah.
You know, lose a substantial amount of that weight. And then you can start thinking about, you know, going into maintenance or whatever, you know, because then you're going to actually be able to see some differences as opposed to getting more and more and more discouraged because you don't see anything because you still have all that weight that you need to lose.
The main difference between a straight up fat loss phase versus body recomposition, let's look at all the similarities. You're going to be in a calorie deficit, essentially. Mm-hmm. You're going to be lifting weights. You're going to be doing some cardio. You're going to be eating high protein. You're going to be focusing on sleep. These are all the similarities. The main difference is with the recomposition, the deficit is significantly lower and you might have some periods of time at maintenance. Whereas for the fat loss phase, the deficit is significantly greater. So you're going to lose fat and weight much more quickly. Everything else stays the same. So the main difference that you would see is in a just straight up fat loss phase, you would see the scale going down more quickly. Your clothes would be getting looser more quickly. You would be losing fat more quickly. With a recomposition, you won't see as much change. So if you've got 70 pounds to lose and you really thrive on seeing this and you need to see it in order to believe it, even regardless of that, that person has no business doing a body recomposition.
Yeah.
It just don't. Go to a straight fat loss phase. And a lot of people ask me in this situation, they'll be like, should I start with lifting weights or cardio?
Yeah.
It's not a choice of either or.
No, I don't understand why that is.
I don't get why people are like, well, which one should I start? Do both. And that doesn't mean you need to do double the amount of training. It means if you only have 3 days a week to work out, then on week one, I would lift 2 days and do cardio one day. And then on week two, I would do cardio 2 days and lift 1 day. And on week three, lift 2 days, cardio 1 day. Week four, cardio 2 days, lift 1 day. Alternate back and forth. You don't need to train every single day. You don't need to only pick one. You do both because they're both going to give you benefits.
Yeah.
And people think that people, because we run on a weekly schedule in terms of our mental capacity and like how the society is set up, they think that, okay, so strength training runs on a 7 day schedule. That's not how it works. Like our bodies don't run on like a Monday to Monday schedule. It's like if you alternate between two strength, one cardio, and then two cardio, one strength, and you alternate back and forth between that, you're still going to get all of the same benefits. It's just now you're incorporating both. And then over time, I bet, ironically, the more you do it, the more progress you see, you'll start to find more time to fit more training sessions, more cardio, more strength training. And that's usually what happens. Most people, they start off, I have no time. Then they start to see the progress, they see the results, and they're like, oh, all of a sudden, I found more time.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that fun how that happens? Yeah, I think that the whole week thing, that was such a revelation for me a while back that, yeah, no, I don't know. Why am I cramming 4 workouts in a week?
Yeah.
If my body is telling me, look, no. I need another day or two here.
Yeah.
You know, it's just gotten rid of so much pressure to cram everything in between Monday to Monday.
Yep.
You know, and I got over the obsession of leg day having to be Monday. I mean, yep. I had to get over that because that was my thing. But once I let that go,
yeah.
Oh my God, it's freedom.
100%.
It's freedom. And you still make progress. So
it's the exact same progress.
It's the exact same
progress. Nothing changes.
Nothing changes except you've given yourself a bit of a break.
Correct.
You know? And this person was saying, well, how much to lose? You know, I think for someone that has 70 pounds to lose, you can surely maybe set an intermediate goal weight if you want to do that. 35, 30 pounds at a time, or however you want to do it. Or you could just do your goal weight right now and go. I mean, that's very individual. People respond differently to that. But try something. I mean, pick something.
It's the classic example of someone overthinking it.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes through overthinking, it's a way to procrastinate.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what about this? What about that? How many times this? How much should I lose here? It's like, you just need to fucking start.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
Stop focusing. It's funny, like, I very much think one of the reasons I've been able to do the stuff that I do is because I really don't think about it very much. I just do it and see what happens along the way.
Yeah.
It's, I think, obviously, I'm not advocating not thinking, but there's a point where when thinking gets in the way of doing, you will never achieve your goals. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just stop fucking thinking about everything and just try something and go.
Yeah. Amen to that. Amen to that. Okay, the next question. I see you guys travel a lot. What are your favorite nutrient-dense fast food gas station kind of meals?
That's a good one. So things are so much easier now than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and the selection's way better than it ever was.
The selection is way better. Like, now you can go into a 7-Eleven or a CVS or a Walgreens and you can get Greek yogurts or cottage cheese or hard-boiled eggs even. You can get packets of oatmeal. You can get things like pumpkin seeds, which are super high fiber, high quality fats.
Jerky.
You could get some great protein shakes, jerky if you'd like. Like, I mean, I'm just listing off all of my favorite things, but even like turkey sandwiches are there, and all of the calories and macros are on them. Like, it's unbelievably simple now and much easier than it's ever been. I remember when I was much younger, I would like, You know when you go to a hotel and they have like some of them have like a water boiler, like so you could like make coffee or tea.
Yeah.
I would go to the grocery store and I would take eggs. Mm-hmm. I'd buy eggs and I'd boil them in there.
Oh, wow.
So I could hard boil my eggs. Yeah. Now I can just go to the fucking
and buy them already peeled and eggs, everything.
So I mean, yeah, those are all of my favorite options. Like for protein, cottage cheese, Greek yogurt, hard-boiled eggs.
You mentioned a turkey sandwich, and it's so funny. I run into those like at the airports and the different stores, whatever. And there's some that are like, I'll do that. I'll do that. You know, 400 calories or something, and 20 some grams of
especially
protein.
Especially 7-Elevens are like 350 or 400 calories. Yeah.
I'll do that in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 7-Eleven has some, and there's always someone who's like, are you getting paid by 7-Eleven? No, I'm not getting paid by fucking 7-Eleven. They have this turkey sandwich and like there's this cheddar cheese in it, like mm-hmm. the orangey mm-hmm. yellow cheese, which like I love that kind.
I
like,
do too.
That's like my favorite kind yep. of cheese. I don't have that every day. And like I generally am not like a big processed meat guy, but if I'm traveling, I'll absolutely grab it
yeah,
for sure.
Me too.
So that's like for protein, whether it's the turkey sandwich, the eggs, the Greek yogurt, the cottage cheese, or like the core power shakes,
mm-hmm.
the core power shakes yeah, that are like awesome. They're delicious those, and super high great. Protein. I like the jerkies a lot. The one deterrent for the jerky is they tend to be like the most expensive out of all of that, which
they
is
are.
Just like,
yeah.
that just sucks. But sometimes I'll have jerky as well. Pumpkin seeds have been a big go-to for me. Yesterday, you just got sunflower seeds, even though they aren't as high fiber. Pumpkin seeds have an insane amount of fiber, which has been great. Also very high quality fat. They always have fruit there too. Bananas, apples, mm-hmm. they always have that stuff. So, I mean, you could go to any convenience store and it's actually remarkably easy to get a very healthy, nutritious option.
Absolutely. It has changed so much.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Especially if you're traveling, right? Like, it's different if you're in, I'll call it inner city Philadelphia, where there are some of the worst food deserts in the entire United States, where you could go 2 to 3 miles and not see a single convenience store. But if you're traveling close to the airport or something, like
on the interstate or something,
exactly, yeah. there's every exit, there's always somewhere you can stop.
There's always something. So the options have really gotten a lot better. There's no reason that you can't find something suitable
yeah.
to meet your needs there, without a doubt. Okay. Do I need to gain weight to increase muscle? Protein and fiber tracked and on goal.
If you want to build muscle, here's the question really is this. Can you build muscle in a calorie deficit, right? Because if you're in a calorie deficit, mm-hmm. you'll be losing weight. The short answer to that is yes, you can build muscle in a calorie deficit. The little bit longer answer is, and I'll start with an analogy, is a question, could if you're going to get in a gunfight, which I hope no one is ever going to get in a gunfight, but if you are, could you win a gunfight if the person you're going to be fighting has a gun and you have a knife? You could.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chance, but it's much more difficult because you have to get really close to the person and the person with the gun can shoot you from wherever, right? It's much harder to win a gunfight if you only have a knife.
Yeah.
Trying to build muscle in a calorie deficit is like trying to win a gunfight with a knife. You can do it, but it's very difficult and you have to be much more meticulous unless you are a brand new beginner, you've never done it before, then yes, but even then it's still not optimal. Optimally would be in at least maintenance calories, if not surplus calories, and that's really when you're gonna get the most bang for your buck, which means you're gonna end up gaining weight. It doesn't have to be a lot of weight though. It could be about 0.5 pound to 1 pound a month on average, right? You're gonna have fluctuations, but on average 0.5 pound to 1 pound a month, and that's fine. You
yeah.
do that for a year and you can build a substantial amount of muscle, but you're going to gain some weight and that's okay.
Yeah. And I think that's what keeps everybody back from trying a small surplus.
Yeah.
You know, because they think it's a surplus means, oh my God, I'm eating all of this food. I'm going to be so
yeah.
stuffed all the time. And oh my God, I'm going to gain weight. Well, yeah, you have to gain weight.
Correct.
I think when I did it, I gained 1 pound a month and that felt very much in control.
Yeah.
You know, and within every month, the scale was all over the place.
Yes.
So it's not like this massive steady climb. I mean, I went down sometimes during the month, and then it would pop back up, and then it would spike out of it.
Correct.
And then come back down, just like it does any time else. So the scale still does its thing, and you need to honestly be on top of that.
Yep.
You know, instead of secretly liking that it goes down.
Yeah.
If you're in a surplus and you're trying to build, that's not going to do you any good.
Correct.
You know, you have to be honest about that.
If you're too scared to gain weight in a surplus so you can build muscle, then you'll never build as much muscle as you want.
Yeah.
That's just a fact.
Yeah.
Like you need to get comfortable being uncomfortable and be okay with gaining some weight.
Yeah.
It's okay. And the cool part is, I think the best way to understand of how to be comfortable with that is to know, you know how to lose the weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a calorie deficit. It's simple.
Yeah.
Once you've done it, you can do it again.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that big of a deal. The hardest part is getting to the point in which you've done that sustainably. Once you've done that sustainably and now you want to gain weight, cool. Now you know how to get back.
You know how to do it.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
Exactly.
I think the people that are scared are the ones that haven't mastered that.
Of course.
They haven't done it. And part of me can understand the whole, I've spent my whole life trying to get the scale to
yeah,
go down.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now I'm trying to get it to go up. Yeah, you know what?
It's a mindfuck.
That is really tough to deal with. I was in that same boat. And you'll bullshit yourself for the first couple weeks and say how full you are and and all that stuff. And you're not really that full. You know, it's easy to find the calories that you need to have. And yeah, sometimes you eat when you're not hungry.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of that too.
And I think another important thing to remember is you're going to mess up.
Yeah.
You will.
Yeah.
It's like the first time you try and go through a fat loss phase, you're going to mess it up.
Yep.
You're going to do something stupid. You're going to mess it up. You're probably going to gain the weight back. So then you do it again. You get a little bit better. You learn how to be a little bit more sustainable with it. Then you do it again. You get even better. You learn how to be more sustainable with it. And you do that over and over and over again until one day you're not doing it anymore. It's just you're maintaining. And it's very simple, very sustainable, very enjoyable. The first time you go in for your first surplus, you're going to mess up. You're probably going to gain too much fat, or like what you did the first time is where you essentially didn't go into a surplus.
Yeah.
Where you were worried about it, so you didn't do it until you're like, all right, enough bullshit. Then you increase your calories.
Yeah.
You're going to mess up. So it's not doing it out of a fear of messing up is stupid, because if you do it, you will mess up, and if you don't do it, you won't make any progress. So you might as well be okay messing up and knowing that you can always try again and try again and try again than to just not try at all.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, next one. The habit loop of unhealthy behaviors and how to change.
The habit loop of unhealthy behaviors and how to change. Do you want to take the lead on this one?
I assume what this person is meaning, just they have all these unhealthy behaviors and they just keep doing them.
Okay.
And that's the loop. They can't stop the loop. You know, they can't stop the loop. And part of me, you know, there's a tough love component to this for sure.
Yeah.
Because that alone is a justification to stay in your loop.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
You're aware that you're doing it, which is good, but now you're not acting on it.
Yeah.
You know? And so I don't know how many unhealthy behaviors we're talking about, but why don't we pick one?
Mm-hmm.
And whatever that one is, and maybe it's eating late at night, and let's see what we can do about not eating late at night. Maybe look at your nutrition during the day and how you're loading yourself up during the day. Are you eating breakfast? Probably not. Yep. So maybe we need to do that and start doing things to help that one thing, that one unhealthy behavior. And then once you get that down, let's look at another one.
Yeah.
One step at a time.
I think a lot of, we'll call it, not good behaviors, things that we know we shouldn't be doing but we are doing, I think a lot of those are, they happen very quickly. And they're often based on impulse, where you're doing great, you're crushing it, and all of a sudden you get a little urge, a little craving, a little trigger, whatever it is, and then just it takes over your entire mindset, your entire body, and then boom, you just do it in mm-hmm. that one moment. And I think one of the best practices, and this is for everyone, myself included, I have behaviors like this as well that like I always strive to work on. I think one of the best things that you can do is take a minute, and I would say give yourself 20 minutes. And just say, you know what? If after 20 minutes I still want to partake mm-hmm. in this behavior, I'll have another conversation with myself. And maybe if it's not that detrimental to me, then I'll do it. But if it's like, and my mind is going to like drugs and like so many different potential negative behaviors just simply outside of health and fitness. But the impulsiveness, the impulsivity, the response to the impulsiveness, where it's just like you feel it, so you do it. That's a habit that needs to be broken. So I think instead of trying to break the habit of doing the bad activity or the bad thing, instead to try to focus on extending the time from when the idea comes into your brain until you take action on it. So I would start with 20 minutes, because if you can extend that time and have a greater delay between the thought and actually doing it, oftentimes by the time the time is up, you don't want to do it anymore. And that, I think, is probably one of the best things that I've been able to incorporate and still try to incorporate.
Yeah, and that works for everything, for not only just health and fitness related stuff, but that could be for anything.
Yes.
Really. It's putting time and distance in between the impulse.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, yeah, you know, that impulse goes down. And it's kind of like, I mean, great example. I find myself, and I use this as well, if I'm heading into the kitchen and I'm just about ready to mindlessly put away whatever it is I'm going to eat, I literally set the timer and I go downstairs. I get out of the environment yep. too. That really helps as far as the food piece goes. And go do something else. And then, yeah, I'm like, okay, no.
Yeah.
After the timer goes off, it's like,
not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Okay. Next one. My doctor told me that your body is always trying to get back to your heaviest weight. Is that true?
So what your doctor is describing is what often people will call a set point. You have a weight set point that no matter what, your body's going to try and go back to it. The deeper physiological term that we have for it, the biological term that we have for it, is called homeostasis, where your body doesn't want to change. It wants to stay exactly where it is. So if you weighed 300 pounds and then you went to 150 pounds and you lost 150 pounds, so now you're 150, the question is, does your body always want to bring you back to 300? There's a lot of different research on this and a lot of different thoughts and opinions. As of right now, I don't think that it's 100% accurate that it's always going to try and bring you back there, especially from the perspective of your physiology, like your body, like your hormones. I do think what is the bigger battle is your brain. I think the behaviors and habits that you had at 300 pounds and getting to 300 pounds become very much ingrained into your daily activities and who you are, how you identify, all these things. These habits and behaviors become a part of you and your life. And the hardest part is that I think the fight is not reverting back to those behaviors.
Yeah.
That's where the biggest struggle is. It's not that your body, and candidly, one could argue that that is part of your physiology. I don't think it's as much of a physiological thing as much as it is a more of a mental, emotional, habitual thing. There's definitely a link there, but it's not just like they're two separate entities entirely, but I do think they're separate enough to say that it's more of a brain thing, more of like a behavioral, habitual thing. So from a weight set point perspective, what I've found is if you lose weight too fast and unsustainably, then your body physiologically will want to fight to bring you back up. It feels like you're starving, and it will decrease your energy, it will increase your hunger, and it will do everything it can to bring you back to where you were. Similarly, if you're underweight, let's say you're 100 pounds and you need to try and gain weight to get to, we'll call it 150 pounds, well, if you do it in an unsustainable way, oftentimes your body will increase energy and decrease hunger to try and bring you back down to that underweight, which can be very, very difficult, especially if you're struggling from a mental and emotional perspective with disordered eating. So it's not just for people who are losing weight, it's also for people who are gaining weight. That's homeostasis. We mm-hmm. all have it. Our bodies all want to stay exactly where we are. However, if you lose weight much more slowly and sustainably, then I think you can actually change your quote-unquote set point. I think that if you maintain a low enough weight in a sustainable way for a long period of time, then the physiological set point can change and you feel much more comfortable. But having worked with enough people who've been severely overweight in their life and lost a lot of weight, I can speak not from personal experience but from coaching experience to tell you that whether you've lost the weight for a year or for 3 years or 5 years or 10 years, it's a daily battle. It's a daily battle to keep it off, not from the physiological, but from the emotional, psychological, behavioral aspect, just always wanting to revert back to your old habits. That's where I think that the major fight is.
I think that's exactly it. I think it's all about habits. And habits, I guess that sounds a little too simple, but it is about your behaviors and things that you were doing when you weighed that amount, and how maybe whatever, wherever those behaviors, and sometimes they're rooted in all kinds of stuff from mm-hmm. family, whatever, history, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And not dealing with those appropriately or not allowing yourself to learn as you're sustainably losing weight and slowly changing what you're doing mm-hmm. and how you're doing it, that's behavior change.
Yes.
You know, and that's what really is going to determine your success ultimately.
Yeah, that's exactly you know? Right.
Okay, help in managing the all or nothing mindset on holiday other than just don't do it. And I don't know if that means just don't do it the holiday or just don't do whatever the holiday.
I think what they're trying to say is on the holiday, how do I not just completely binge out?
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot that goes into this. I don't think that the holiday is the problem. I think that what you're doing before the holiday is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're overly restricting yourself, starving yourself, not allowing yourself to enjoy certain foods, all while keeping in mind that, oh, well, the holiday
when coming. That
comes, it's going to be fucking sick because then I'll be able to eat all these favorite foods and then I'll be able to do this. Well, you're setting yourself up for a massive Absolutely. Binge on holiday. But if you can enjoy those foods in moderation now leading up to the holiday, then by the time you go on holiday, it's not as big of a deal. It doesn't matter because it's like, well, it's sort of just like regular, except now I don't have work. And now maybe I'm not tracking my calories this week. And so if you gain weight on holiday, that's fine. But there's a difference between gaining weight in a little bit over holiday and just binging out. And I actually care less about the weight and more about the behavior. I care less about gaining 5 to 10 pounds over holiday, and I care more about the behavior of why are you binging on holiday?
Mm-hmm.
Because people can binge and actually not gain weight. They can binge and then have another binge, but instead of the binge on food, they can binge on exercise the next day. So they could actually make it seem like they didn't do bad, but they actually the binge behaviors are not healthy, needless to say. So I would look at what you're doing before the holiday, and if you're being overly strict, then I would start being very objective and candid with yourself and saying, maybe I should relax a little bit, do things a little bit more sustainably, so when I do go on holiday, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I think so, because, I mean, you want to be able to go and enjoy the holiday, obviously, with your family, friends, or whoever, and not, you know, worry about what you're eating and tracking and all these other things. Of course, you want to go and enjoy yourself, but you also don't want to come back and start beating yourself up
mm-hmm.
for what you did on holiday, you know? And I think you're spot on. If you're overly restricting in preparation for the holiday, which we see a lot, right? They're cutting way back
mm-hmm.
before we go on this cruise or before we go on this whatever. Yeah, I think you've set yourself up for...
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely, moderation wins again. There's a theme here. Okay, how to involve significant others into your health journey.
Do you want to start with this one?
Because
I think it's good to just be honest about it.
This is a tough one, you know, and every scenario is going to be different. I know it with my own scenario. I've tried very unsuccessfully, so I stopped. I didn't want the fight. I didn't want the battle anymore because it was becoming a real battle. So I left it alone. And when I left it alone, all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but a while later, I was asked to write a program, a very simple
mm-hmm.
weight program that he could do downstairs, whatever, a couple times a week and blah, blah, blah. So moral of the story is... You know, you can set an example, you can be supportive, be their cheerleader, when, you know, ask them if they want to come out for a walk with you or, you know, whatever. And that's what you do.
Yep.
You know, and you can't make anybody do anything, even though you know that deep down in your heart, that's what they need to do. It's going to improve their health and it's probably going to improve their quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. And you're right.
Yep.
But you can't deal with that with a significant other, I don't think.
No.
I wouldn't know a married couple that could do that.
You can't force someone to do something.
No.
You can't. And the more you try and shove it down their throat, the more they're going to get pissed.
Yep.
That's just basic psychology 101. The best thing you can do is live your life, set a good example. If you see them doing things that you think are good behaviors, like drinking more water, having vegetables, getting more steps in, go over the top to compliment them and to positively reinforce. Mm-hmm. Negative reinforcement is a bad idea for most people. Like if they're being a little bit lazy and not moving as much, I wouldn't say like, God, you're just being so lazy. It's a terrible idea. Instead, if they do anything good, even remotely good, you go over the top positive reinforce. It's very, very, very simple behaviors that you can look at and actively say, oh my God, like, I'm so proud of you. Seriously, like, that's amazing. I'm glad that you're doing that. Boom. End of conversation. That's it. You don't need to carry it on. Don't need to say, you know what else you could do.
Yeah.
Just, that was so good. I'm really proud of you. Have an amazing day. Boom. That's it. And this isn't 100%. There's a real chance that they won't do it. But you can give yourself and them the best chance of success by bits of positive reinforcement, living your life, and then letting them come to you. And that's really all you can do.
You know, the one big difference I noticed in my scenario is how, and I never really said anything except back in the day, I would ask, like, he would make pasta, there would be no protein source.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because he never did that.
Yeah.
You know, and my husband's the primary cook, at least at dinner. And now we always, he's literally thinking, of what's the protein going to be tonight?
Yeah.
That's significant.
It's huge.
That's significant. And now he's making massive quantities of vegetables.
That's amazing.
We didn't sit down and have a discussion about that.
Yeah.
That is from observing his wife and his son,
mm-hmm.
who are now both into this whole fitness life, I guess, and really caring about what we consume. And he knows it's good for him too. He knows that.
That's amazing.
So. But it didn't come from, okay, we have to sit down and talk
about
this.
There's no intervention about it. Yeah.
There's definitely no intervention. Okay, next question. What to do if you can hit nutrition or workout goals, but you can't hit both?
I would, number one, want to ask why.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine it's maybe you're being unrealistic in what your goal is. So my first thing is, like, maybe just reduce the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, bring the goalpost closer to you.
Mm-hmm.
If your goalpost is too far away and you can never hit it, then there's no point in having it there.
That does, right.
Just bring it closer.
Right.
And maybe you're right now, it's like, okay, you're trying to work out 4 times a week and you're trying to hit, I don't know, we'll just call it 1,800 calories a day. So cool. You can hit 1,800, but you can't work out 4 times a week. Then work out 2 times a week.
Yeah.
Start with that.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's... What this is coming from is, it sounds like, is a person who has what they believe to be the perfect or the best program, and they want to follow the best program. But something I learned starting coaching at 14, 15, 16 years old, you could have the best program in the world, but if you're not following it, then it is no longer the best program in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said for years, a B- program followed consistently is better than an A+ program followed inconsistently.
Yep.
So all you have to do is bring the goalpost closer to you so you can hit both. And as you get better and better and better, if you'd like to, make the goalpost a little bit further away. But the reality is, the amount you need to do to improve your health is so small, it's fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to do a lot to improve your health and to live longer. If you want to reach a level of, that's actually one of the reasons I hate shows like The Biggest Loser. There are many reasons. But one of the reasons is they take these people who are severely overweight, severely undertrained, and never mind they're starving them, they're making them train for 6 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, okay, hold on. Like, elite Olympic level athletes don't train this much. Why are we doing this to people who are mm-hmm. brand new to this? So people have this skewed idea that they need to do a lot just to be healthy. It's like, to be healthy, you actually need a very small amount.
Yeah.
If you want to be an elite athlete, then yeah, it will increase, but it still won't be as much as The Biggest Loser type shit.
Yeah.
They don't train for 6 hours a day.
No.
You can't. So yeah, it's bring the goalpost closer to you and find a way to succeed that way.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely perfect. Just too many things going on. And probably in this person's head, there's kind of some semblance of what we were talking about earlier, trying to get all the workouts in within that week. You know,
yes.
I didn't get all 4 within the week.
Correct.
Okay, well then do the first 2 this week and the next 2 the next week. And,
yeah.
And just...
Or like, I don't know, the workouts I have, like, they take too long. Then cut them in half.
Yeah.
Don't do the second part. Just do the first half. And that's your day. That's fine.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
You're doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole... People want to... They want to change everything,
mm-hmm.
and they want to be able to just do it all, boom, like
perfectly.
That.
Yep. Yeah.
And boy, that's just not reality for really anyone.
No, not at all.
And even the people that seem like it's a reality for, I'll tell you right now, it's not.
It's not, correct.
It's not. Okay. Aim for 80% consistency in maintenance 2 or higher, since we want to maintain.
just overthinking it. Just,
yeah.
Just 80%.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's 76. I've seen people make incredible progress staying 70% consistent. I've seen people make great progress, not that much greater, staying at 85% consistent. Yeah. It's, that's just like, you're overthinking it. Like, just fucking do it.
Yeah.
It's
not 80. It's 81, actually. Yeah, you know?
Like, I'm getting stressed thinking about how stressed this person must be, thinking about, well, what percentage do I, just fucking, I don't know, around 80%.
Yeah.
Around.
Yeah. Somewhere in that neighborhood, please. Is good. Yeah.
And it's, yeah. And then I think, like, well, all right, so this person's talking about maintenance. So this person's trying to maintain their weight. It sounds like they're probably, they just finished a fat loss phase and they don't want to gain any weight back. So they're getting a little bit nervous about potentially gaining weight back. You're probably going to gain some weight back.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
You gain some weight back. Now you know how to lose it again.
Yeah.
It's not a big fucking deal.
It's not. It's not. There, and this is such a great indication of how so much of this is in our head.
Yeah.
And it's not reality.
Yeah. And going to the whole maintenance aspect of it, people have this idea that maintenance is you just stay at one weight. It's like my maintenance range is 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Between like 146 to like 156 or so. Maybe like 146 to 160 is like my range. And when I reach the top end of the range, cut back down.
Yeah.
And then I'll slowly go back up until about a year later. All right, come back down. That's it. That's maintenance.
Yeah, you're just in that little bubble.
That's my bubble.
Yours is just a 10-pound bubble.
Some people have a smaller bubble. Some people have a 5-pound bubble or a 7-pound bubble.
Mine's about a 4-pound, 5-pound bubble.
Whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so interesting. At one point, I was telling someone I was at the upper end of my maintenance range. I was just hovering in the top part of it for a while. And then I was asked, well, what's your signal when you need to get back down to the bottom part? And I'm like, I'm not looking to lose.
Yeah.
This is just where I live.
Yeah.
If I'm looking to lose, it's no longer maintenance, is it?
Correct. That's right.
I'm trying
exactly
to lose
right.
weight.
Yep.
That's not what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm hovering in this bubble. I'm just happen to hover over here.
Yeah.
And ironically, right now I'm hovering in the low part of my bubble.
Yep.
And I've been here for a while, and that will change too. But it's just interesting the mindset around this.
Yeah.
Oh, you have to lose. No, 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 no.
No.
No. Because it's not maintenance anymore.
Right. It's exactly right.
Okay. So the last one, and this is phrased, I would be curious to find out what you think this person's talking about, but it kind of opens up a whole thing. Genetic testing for nutrition and fitness.
Ugh. These questions today are really stressing me out.
There are a lot of worried people about all kinds of things.
I've heard people genetic testing their kids to see like what type of muscle fibers they have, whether they're fast twitch dominant or slow twitch dominant, to figure out what sport they should specialize them in. I don't even know how to say it other than like, you don't need to fucking do that.
Yeah.
Move, lift weights, try and get good sleep, eat protein, eat fiber, stay hydrated, regardless of your genotype, it'll work.
You know, and it will. And I'm wondering if this person's thinking, get genetic testing so they can find out, do they have, quote, good genetics, unquote, to help them with certain things? Or do they have bad genetics where they're going to be prone to,
I think there are marketers out there who say things like, take my genetics quiz or take my body type quiz to figure out what type of body you are, because then we're gonna have a different workout and diet for you. There's like the blood type diet, so mm-hmm. people need to figure out what type of blood type they are. And it's like, I think people are getting confused by the marketers out there, so they think that everything needs to be super individualized to them based on their gene type, whatever the fuck that means. So like, I don't know, I'm Ashkenazi Jew, but I don't do anything fucking different than you.
Yeah.
And like, you're like, what's your heritage?
I am a Scottish and British and German.
Okay, so we share literally none.
Nothing. Yeah.
Literally
yeah.
none, and yeah. same shit. We
and
do the
we're
same
doing
workouts.
The same stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Same workouts. Yep. Similar nutrition. Like, it's and different gender. Mm-hmm. Like, different age.
It couldn't be more different.
Same shit.
Couldn't be more different.
It's
and ironically, we're both still getting results.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Go figure.
Yeah, you don't need fucking genetic testing for that at all.
I mean, even if you had genetic, so what are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
I mean, what does it matter? You know, you and I have been talking. I get asked this a lot about genetics, and people tell me, you know, well, you just have good genetics. Well, I mean, how do you know what my genetics
yeah.
are? I'm really interested to know that. And, you know, one thing about my genetics that I do know is obesity. Mm-hmm. I have that on my dad's entire side of the family,
yeah.
right? So, okay, you're going to look at that about me too?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, let's not discount what people do
yeah.
to make it happen.
Hard work is the vast majority of it.
That's it. So the obesity genetics I may be predisposed to, I haven't let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know? The same thing that if I have any genetics in my family that will give me a little help with muscle building, I certainly don't know about it. I've never seen it.
Yeah. yeah.
I don't know. But it wouldn't do anything if you don't put in the work.
Correct.
You know? So what good does it do to know any of this?
Yeah. Like, what's the point of even finding out?
Yeah.
Like, what? How is it going to, are you going to hire a coach and say, hey, here's my genetic tests? Or like, the only way there's like one way to build muscle, right? It's like you train properly and you eat properly.
Yeah.
And you sleep properly.
Yeah.
That's it. And it's the same for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It can.
Like, regardless of your age too. Let's put
yeah.
that out there.
Yep.
Because
and gender.
Everybody yeah. is putting their age at the beginning of every question.
Correct.
And it's like the least relevant thing about your question.
Yep. Whether you want to lose fat, it's the same for everybody. Build
yep.
muscle, same for everybody. If you want to get more flexible, basically the same for everybody. If
yeah.
you want to like build a bigger deadlift, basically the same for everybody. It's the same shit over and over. And I know like this isn't a good sales tactic. Like if a real good sales tactic is, oh, well, what you need is you need to get genetic testing. Then you need to pay me $500 to interpret the genetic test results. Then I can give you a personalized plan just for you based on your genetic testing. That would be a good smarmy sales model.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is you don't need that.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
it's irrelevant. That if you want to get more explosive, there's a way to do it. If you want to get more flexible, there's a way to do it. If you want to build more muscle, there's a way to do it. And it's the same shit for everybody.
Yeah, you know, and I guess I hope this is actually great news for people that are so overthinking certain aspects of things. In that, it is simple. It's not easy to do.
Yep.
But it is actually simple.
Super
in concept.
Simple. Very simple.
It's very simple in concept. So we don't have to get into the weeds anymore. Get out of the weeds and let's take a look at the bigger picture and the bigger rocks that you can start to work on to improve
yeah.
your health. And watch what happens when you start doing that.
Yep.
You know, take the weight off your shoulders, for God's sakes, and stop putting pressure on yourself to have to get to this exact number or to this exact percentage or know what your genetics are, for God's sakes, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, good God, can you imagine the pressure?
No, I hate it. I don't even like answering the question.
I know.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah.
It's too, just the thing, you don't need anything else. You have everything you need.
Yeah.
You have all the information you need. How many calories to eat, how much protein, how much fiber to eat, strength training. I mean, shit, you don't even need to pay for strength. You could go on ChatGPT AI and ask for a training program. I've done it. And they're actually remarkably good
mm-hmm.
for free. The main reason you'd want to pay for someone is because of the accountability. I think that's probably the major component. But everything you need is there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. You don't need to go take another test or do, like, you're good. Just start.
Yeah, just start. So let that be the message in closing this out, is just start.
That's
it. Pick one thing you want to get better at and really
just
get going and get better at it.
Yeah.
And watch what happens.
It's pretty wild.
It is pretty wild.
Eventually, someone's going to blame it on your genetics.
Then
you'll be real pissed.
Then I'll be real pissed. All right. So tell everybody where they can find you just in case they have no idea, which, come on, but just in case.
Just Google my name, Jordan Syatt, S-Y-A-T-T.
And you'll find him everywhere.
Yeah, that's
you'll
it.
Find him. Well, thank you.
Love you very
Love
much.
Love you very much.